I would move that, I don't have it in front of me, that we, I would move policy option one as recommended by LSO.
Discussion? Heard Representative Johnson's motion, do I have any objection other than Representative Hayden? Not, so moved. And then I need a motion to...
Madam Chair, I move that we move Senate Bill 304, as they engrossed, to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
You've heard Representative Butler's motion, any objection?
Discussion.
Discussion, Representative Hayden.
Discussion, I'm going to raise that hobgoblin of little minds, consistency. We are busily endeavoring to establish oversight of the Columbia Gorge Commission, and we are busily, and Senate Bill 304 breaks that link of oversight with the appraiser certification and licensure board. Semi-independent agencies are rare. I really don't know what they are other than the two that we've mentioned, and my comfort level is not such that I can vote for Senate Bill 304.
Madam Chair?
Representative Butler?
May I respond to that in part?
You okay?
Yeah, we're okay, thank you.
In part, my response to that concern would be that the Columbia Gorge Commission is a group of folks who take care of the government function, and I think by and large, the appraisers, like dentists or like doctors or other folks, accountants, and we've done the same thing for folks like the Tax Service Licensing Board, they have that autonomy. And so I would submit to you that strictly performing a government function of oversight of the gorge versus performing a function which is broadly used within the private sector and the public sector would be the distinction that I would make between the two.
Representative Hayden?
Representative, with all respect, I would agree with you. If appraisers and dentists and CPAs could have a license without joining those groups, without being a part of that group, and without being under the control of those groups, but they cannot. They cannot function unless they have the imprimatur of these groups, which gives these groups enormous power. I'm sure that the dentists and CPAs and doctors and any agency you like would like this status. I'm not sure that it's a good status. I think that we do need legislative review.
I've asked LSO Robin Lamont to help us with some since we don't have a list. And Lori's assured that she will get you a list.
A couple of sessions ago, we did this with the Board of Engineering and Land Surveying, the Landscape Architects Board, the Board of Architects Examiners. Not too long ago, we did this with Oregon Health Sciences University. So it isn't a terribly unusual precedent, but there does need to be scrutiny to make sure that what you are doing is in fact a good public policy action.
And don't we still, Madam Chair, the question of legislative fiscal, don't we still maintain that oversight that their budget would still flow through a ways and means process?
No.
It does not.
It does not.
So at that particular point, what actually happens with their board in a semi-autonomous status is that the governor is the one that they must report to the governor and the legislature on a regular basis.
And they are still subject to the Secretary of State's audit in terms of their accountability for the use of their dollars.
Licensure reports of complaints, investigations, sanctions, any rule changes, public meetings.
And when you are out of the room, Mr. Kruger testified that they do have federal regulatory oversight as well.
As I say, I have a bill similar. Excuse me, Madam Chair, I beg your pardon. I do have a similar bill to do this for both the ACLB as well as the CCB, the Construction Contractors Board. I don't know if it'll go anywhere. But.
In this process, of course it will. Senator Dukes and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to admit that the more we discuss this poorer an idea, it sounds like, but I'm still there. I think that, I mean, it's sort of like the lawyers, the Bar Association controls all of that. I can understand why they'd want to, and we've been slowly doing this to more and more, and more and more are going to come in and want it. And I have a sneaking suspicion that at some point in time, whether it's a serious downturn in the economy or whatever the heck it is, at some point in time, they're all going to come scurrying back for cover. But if they want to, and the only concern I have is to make sure that the consumers are protected. And in this case, I assume that the federal regulations will allow that to happen. The difference with the Columbia River Gorge is that is a federal compact, and those things are difficult at best because we have little, if any, authority. And I want to give them a shot and see what happens.
Like you say, they may be back.
No, I think all these little critters are going to come back and say,
we
need your protection.
Thank you. In looking at this over the weekend, I think that the report out of the Substantive Committee on the Senate side was unanimous, was it not?
Representative Johnson, I don't have that information.
Representative Butler.
I move the previous question.
Representative Butler moves the previous question. Any objections other than Representative Hayden? Not so much. Senator Dukes, do you feel comfortable carrying this bill to the floor? Or?
I suppose.
Okay.
It'll do whatever it does.
And,
it's my day. Yeah, that it is. Okay. Yeah, I get it.
We have a work session that was for Senate Bill 304 plus Senate Bill 5507. I'd like to go into the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, on your memo, item number one is for the Office of Women, Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. You'll see the backup spreadsheet information for this portion of Department of Community and Business Services on page two of the spreadsheet. The first recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve the revised current service level of $632,856 other funds, five positions, and five full-time equivalencies. This includes a reduction of $5,832 for FERS and standard assessment rate reduction.
In a work session.
In a work session, yes.
Madam Chair?
Senator Dukes.
I'll move the LFO recommendation. That's all I have to say. We're okay.
Senator Dukes moves the LFO recommendation.
Discussion.
Discussion.
Madam Chair, are we 100% satisfied that when we move the small business offices, including the small business offices for women, minority, and emerging enterprises in the Office of Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, that there's no duplication in this process? Are we absolutely certain that we're not duplicating some of the same functions and activities? I realize that the primary difference is that there's a certification that is given by this office, but my question is, couldn't that certification be offered through the Small Business Development Centers?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's two separate issues. The first question as to whether or not there's duplication in what this office does, I do not believe so, because its primary function is certification, which is not done elsewhere. The issue of whether or not they could be consolidated is a separate issue that probably would need to be taken up in a substantive bill.
Madam Chair.
the certification, the what we're saying is the certification might be able to be done through someone else if this particular office wasn't funded to do it.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, what I'm saying is that what this office does under the existing funding structure is not a duplication of what's being done in any other area.
But some of these other areas maybe could be.
Right. And finally, let me just ask this. Statutorily, Must the certification be done by this office and this office only?
Currently, yes.
So, Representative Johnson.
I think a more clarifying question with respect to Representative Butler would be, what is it that the Oregon Economic and Community Development Office does? Because this one seems to be strictly certification, and that certification is required by federal and state contracts. And if the other is simply advocacy, that could easily be done by the small business development, or even with respect to the director, who was probably flinching at the thought of picking up more work with fewer people and less money, the advocacy piece move over here. But I think the more important question is, what does the office do in OEDD, not what does the office do here?
And this office testified that they do, in fact, work with the minority and women commissions, so the minority commissions, and do have a direct connection with them, which is the
Madam Chair, yes, in terms of their certification function.
Yes.
Well, I think what the committee, first of all, for a couple of you, I think you're going to have testimony this afternoon on the small business functions within economic development, and that might be a good place to start in terms of if in fact there's legislative interest in some merged function. But the question in front of you right now is whether or not this board, the way that it's funded and the activities that it performs, whether that is a duplication of services that are provided elsewhere, and the answer is it is not. So you could move this budget and then make the determination as to whether or not you choose to combine those functions through another bill.
And are we satisfied, Minister, and I apologize for having to have missed the portion of that, are we satisfied that the funding sources, the potential funding sources, after the Attorney General's opinion relative to ODOT and the other kinds of issues, that as we involve local government and regional government, are we satisfied that the funding will be adequate to actually meet this, not just through the end of the current biennium or for the first year of the second of this next biennium, but throughout the next biennium? Was the committee satisfied?
I think Representative Johnson pursued that a bit.
Madam Chair, Debbie can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe she testified that they were pursuing the funding through local government, and should that funding not materialize, that it was their intent to reduce the program.
Madam Chair, can I follow up on that? If we have the ability to reduce the program through a reduction of funding, will we still be able to meet our statutory requirements?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we are confident that as we pursue the local governments through their budget processes, if those don't come through, that ODOT is the safety net. We still have legal statutory authority to get funds back from ODOT. We are trying, as we do with all our programs, just to be as inexpensive as possible. We don't intend to reduce the five people in our program, but we will. If we don't have money in the bank, we would have to reduce our program. We'd have to come back to the e-board and talk about how we do that. But we are absolutely confident that the money will be available through ODOT as a last resort. What we're trying to do is be as conservative as possible with those state highway funds. But if we need to use them to keep the program whole, we will return to ODOT and ask them to increase the 41% contribution.
Legislative fiscal will not require an e-board action to shift ODOT funding at that point into as a revenue source or as an additional disbursement from the Department of Transportation's budget.
Madam Chair, Ms. Representative Butler, I don't know what would be required within ODOT's budget, but I would suspect that they probably have significant limitation, and the amount that we are talking about here, I would suspect.
Madam Chair, I think it's probably self-evident that in an organization as large as state government or federal government, that there's a large amount of duplication. And it would be enormously difficult to identify it and then to minimize it and mitigate it if one wanted to embark on a 10-year plan to do that and have an oversight committee to do that. Probably the first place one would go to get the information would be to the agencies themselves. Just require them to say, who does what you're doing? Because every agency knows what the other agencies are doing on their turf. just as every politician knows what their opponent is doing. I mean, it's just obvious. On the other hand, and you would think that reducing duplication would be good because it would be more cost effective, but maybe not. Maybe there's safety in many voices. Maybe the diversity adds something to the process. It's there. Is it there by happenstance, or is there a logical reason for the duplication and overlap?
And I hope with the Department of Administrative Services that some of the things that they're doing and looking at when they testified before a committee on various things that they're doing, hopefully they will recognize if there is truly duplication that is not, like if they needed for a safety valve. I think you have a very good point there. If some agency isn't doing as good a job as the other on something, why we may need that backup. Let's see, we have a motion by Senator Dukes. Further discussion? Any objection? Not moved.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve a reduction of $29, 1% in out of control.
That's hard to swallow.
There's obviously be a lot of discussion on that. Are you still moving?
In the interest of cutting government and fiscal responsibility, I would move to cut the $29.
I wouldn't expect
just have one question is, wouldn't we just save $29 worth of paperwork by just deleting it out of there?
Let's see. Who made this motion? Representative Johnson. Any objection?
The final recommendation then leaves the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business with a budget of $632,827 other funds, 5 positions, and 5 full-time equivalents.
Motion?
I move legislative fiscal recommendations relative to the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses.
Any discussion?
Madam Chair, and
Lori,
why did we do bullet one and bullet three? I don't understand why we're voting on the budget question.
The difference between bullet one and bullet three?
$29. $29.
Yeah.
Why didn't we just vote on the $29 and then on the?
Make that in the form of a motion.
632,827.
Representative Hayden, because this is simply the way I chose the layout. No, consistent with how other legislative fiscal office analysts have done it.
Yes, Madam Chair, in fairness, we have been asked to make sure that the committee gets a chance to act on the current service level, and therefore, if we hadn't included the change after the current service level, then someone would have asked us what the difference was.
Okay.
Okay. Any objection? If not, moved.
Madam, it just goes into the full bill in the 5507.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Just one more part of 5507.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One more little piece.
Okay, close the work session on Senate Bill 5507 and Senate Bill 304 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5507, Central Support Services Division.
Which is getting back to it.
Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director again. Central Support Services section of your budget starts on page 74 under the tab Central Support Services. On page 74 is an outline of what those services entail, and they're actually two divisions and several offices involved in the Central Support Services. What we have done is we brought these agencies together, and again, we're kind of a federation of small agencies some of them not so small, that came together in the late 80s. It's the Division of Insurance and Finance, and in 1993 as the Department of Consumer and Business Services, as different agencies have been added. And we have pulled together the central administrative functions in order to maximize resources and build on economies of scale. The central services budget then is composed of the director's office, which is the Director Mary Nottig and myself includes our communications section, which is a small group that does publications, web services. We have one person who deals with the media, and we do outreach to people who have limited English capabilities and cultural barriers to accessing state government. The other large piece of the director's office is the Office of Personnel Services. This is a group of 15 people who provide the human resources services, including recruitment and labor relations. We have two unions, negotiate with both the SEIU and the AFSCME. We do job classification and so forth, disciplinary issues. The third piece of the Central Support Services is the Business Administration Division. This is the group of folks who handle budgeting, payroll, fiscal accounting, cashiering, purchasing, contracting, property management, telecommunications, and all the business functions that make an agency run. The fourth piece is our Information Management Division. Again, we have centralized the management of our computer resources, technical resources, as well as some research functions. And that budget has gone through the Subcommittee on E-Government. The fifth piece, two offices that are directly within the associated with the director's office, are the Small Business Ombudsman and the Ombudsman for Injured Workers. These folks are both workers' compensation-related ombudsmen. The Small Business Ombudsman, again, not to confuse it with some of the offices we've just been talking about, exists to help small businesses wend their way through the workers' compensation maze. So this person is available to help small businesses find workers' compensation insurance to help those people get through the processes when there are claims or when they have issues with their insurer, those kinds of issues. And the Ombudsman for Injured Workers is then available to help injured workers also get through the workers' compensation system, and deals an awful lot with people, injured workers who are having difficulties with their insurance company. I want to stress that those ombudsmen are there to help third parties resolve conflicts. They're not there necessarily to help outsiders deal with the department, but to help injured workers deal with insurance companies or businesses deal with insurance companies. So it's an external function. On the next page, page 75, again, I want to mention the main purpose of having these agencies centralized. We pull these together so that the cost of resources and expertise can be shared among divisions. We have a fairly sophisticated process to determine the balance between centralization and decentralization. That is, we look to see what is most cost-effective pulled into a central division and what should be left individually to the divisions themselves. And I think we've struck a balance between centralization and decentralization that does maximize our resources and our skills. For example, we have a contract officer centrally. There's an awful lot of training and even certification now that goes into purchasing and contracting, and we do that centrally so that we don't have to train, go through expensive training in every division for division contractors. Our mission for central services, and particularly for the director's office, is to help guide policy development and to add to the value of the missions of the programs. We try very hard not to be another bureaucratic layer without meaning. If the director's office and central services don't add value to the programs, then there's no sense in having them. So we concentrate on adding value to the mission of the programs, and again to ensuring that resources and expertise are shared across all the divisions. There are a number of goals that we need to concentrate on in the coming years. We very much need to continue and ramp up our recruitment needs. We have highly skilled technical, professional technical people in the division, in the department, who, when the economy is good particularly, can find better jobs in the private sector and local jurisdictions, and we are constantly improving our ability to recruit high-level professional technical folks, lawyers, bank examiners, industrial health people, electrical inspectors, those kinds of very technical folks who are in demand. And another issue that we're dealing with, of course, is that at least half of our staff are over 45, and we're going to be seeing some major turnover in the next few years. So we're looking into succession planning and ensuring that we can bring along people both in management and in professional technical fields who can step into those positions as retirements occur. We are always aiming for very sound fiscal control, and our business administration division reviews its processes all the time to ensure that each department and the variety of fees and assessments that we administer are managed in a sound fiscal manner and meet audit standards. Our information management division particularly is hoping to expand our information analysis and delivery to both internally, so that policymakers within the department and within state government have sound decision information on which to make decisions, and externally, so that our customers and consumers know what it is that we have available and how to navigate their way within our programs. One of our major goals, too, is our use of the Internet. Our consumers, our customers, because of who they are, because they are, many of them are fairly sophisticated businesses and organizations, probably have a higher rate of access to computers than other agencies' customers do. And we are ramping up our use of the Internet for customer interactions. We've put a lot of interactive forms, training, that kind of thing on the web, and we are leaders in the Department of Administrative Services efforts toward e-commerce. We are one of the pilot agencies and are chairing the effort to redo, reorganize Oregon Online for ease of access. Let me run real quickly through some of the things we've done in the current biennium, which illustrates what Central Services does in the department. The Director's Office, we've worked with legislators and stakeholders on a variety of issues. Representative Butler is aware of our efforts during the interim to pull together a committee on building code system. We chaired that out of the Director's Office. Our goal is to get stakeholders to the table and hash out contentious issues before they come to the legislature, and then be able to bring results to the legislature. And we've done that with the building code system, with patients' rights and the health insurance field. We staff the Management Labor Advisory Committee and workers' compensation, and that's our preferred way of doing business.
I just didn't hear you. Migrant workers? I just didn't.
Management Labor Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
It's my Monday morning mumble.
I just didn't hear my Monday morning ears. Sorry. Thank you.
Our communications section, one of the things that we have done this biennium and hope to continue to do is to expand outreach to Oregonians with limited English speaking skills, and I'll be talking about that in a little bit because we want to continue that program. We have a number of folks whose English is not as good as it could be to keep them safe or to allow them to navigate a complex government regulatory program, and we are very conscious that our goal is to serve all Oregonians, and we are making an effort to reach folks in the Latino, the Vietnamese, the Russian communities particularly, who have not had access to our services before. Our personnel services, there are a couple of particular initiatives that I want to point out. The safety of our own employees is very, very important to us. We drive millions of miles a year in our inspections. For example, we have people on construction sites and factories. And given that we are the department that has Oregon OSHA in it, we are very conscious that we need to be a model for safety, for providing safety of our own employees. And the personnel services group has that responsibility in it, and we take it very seriously. And we are, again, developing management skill sets as we plan for the future and the skills of managers coming up the pipeline.
Can any of what you're developing be exported to other agencies or shared with other agencies?
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, absolutely. In fact, I sit on a statewide advisory board for training, and we have developed expectations of our own managers, what managers need to do to do their jobs well. That is, they need to understand the system, they need to understand personnel issues, they need to understand budgeting, those kinds of things. And those management expectations are serving as the basis for the development of the Department of Administrative Services expectations for all state agencies. And we do share training and those kinds of things.
Madam Chair, I hope that you might be persuaded to share with your state board that you sit on your advisory panel how useful it is to have that kind of collaboration so that you don't have each agency developing little pockets of some of the specialized outreach that you're doing. For example, if you're tailoring programs to speak to the Vietnamese, the Russian populations, if that can be shared, there's no point in ODOT, for example, doing exactly the same kind of work. And that really is at the heart of the efforts that some of us made to look at the training, specifically when we were looking at the Department of Transportation's budget, to see what they're doing that's duplicative of what DAS is doing or what could be incorporated into the Department of Administrative Services course offerings for managers. Because really some of the skills of being a manager in your department are no different a skill set than being a manager someplace else. And it seems to me that if you're going to try to inculcate excellence across agencies, having some standardized curricula that are shared interagency just makes all the sense in the world. And if yours are pockets of excellence in certain specialized areas, sharing those with other agencies, either directly or through DAS, seems to be both efficient and prudent.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I absolutely agree, and the personnel director from ODOT sits on this board as well, and we met just Friday, as a matter of fact, and shared the board shared the management expectations from DCBS. Actually, they've been following up the development of ours for some time, and we're part of the development of the statewide expectations. Scott and I have developed the budgeting class that we give to our folks, which this group and several agencies have asked to have the curriculum for it, so that that's already done. It's ready to go. It can be exported to anybody. So there is a lot of interest in sharing that kind of thing.
Having as an agency person that I was for 5 years, having sat through budget presentations in another agency, it seemed like every cycle was a new blank piece
right.
of paper.
Right.
And I fully support what you're doing. I just hope that there's an opportunity for agencies to come back to whether it's this subcommittee or other parts of the budgeting process next session and share the collaborative work, because I think all of us have been looking with some interest at individual agencies developing curricula that don't touch at any other point with any other agency, and those shared opportunities to bring a standard of excellence across agencies, I think would be welcomed in this building.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, the Department of Administrative Services, Human Resource Services Division is doing a really good job in pulling that together. I think Mike Greenfield particularly has given them a charge to do exactly what you're talking about, and the folks in DAS are working hard on that very thing. And I think the largest agencies particularly, which are the ones to start with, are very much supportive of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just ask one question, Debbie. The internal audit is handled through the Central Support Services?
Mr. Chair, yes. The internal auditor reports directly to me and the director.
How many internal audits do we have in the Central Support?
Mr. Chair, we have one.
Let me just, when we, how many employees total?
1,100 and about 50.